We got to the point in school where we're like, why are we trying to force this kid to learn math? She's not going to, we had faced reality at that point.
Right.
And that's another one that's really hard too, is like, when do we start talking about that this is where your child is going to be, that they're not going to be able to hold time a part-time job, because it happens. For every child that you see that, we got a mainstreamed, and they're talking about being able to work in a job. That is amazing, and that's great. But for every one of those children, I don't know what the statistics are, how many more kids are like my daughter, are like Caitlin, where, okay, now we have to face the reality that she will never leave home. What do we do from there?
Hi, my name's Stephen.
Hi, I'm April.
This is the 3 Pi Squared ABA Business Leaders Podcast, where we discuss topics on how to create and grow an ethical and sustainable ABA practice.
Together, Stephen and I owned a 7-figure ABA practice that provided both clinic and in-home services.
3 Pi Squared has helped over 900 ABA practices start up and expand with our comprehensive products and services geared specifically to ABA. Now, let's get to the podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to ABA Business Leaders, brought to you by 3 Pi Squared. I'm April.
Stephen.
And today we have with us Melanie Thurston. Welcome, Melanie.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Absolutely. So, Melanie, I worked with her, gosh, years ago. I worked with her family, with her daughter. And, through lovely social media, we've stayed, somewhat connected over the years. And I've been following her journey. And she not only is a nurse and mother and wife and all the busy things, she's also an author. And so it's so exciting. She's also a mom of a kid with autism. And so, anyway, all of this together, I started thinking about it, and I really wanted to have Melanie on the podcast because, I know that this is focused towards ABA business leaders and owners, right? But who's more important than the parents of the kids that we serve? And I know that a lot of times there's discussion about, the parents, they were being so difficult. And we've been asking so many times for them to do this thing, and they're not doing this thing, right? And we also hear, like, that parent's great and stuff like that. But I guess what I'm trying to say here is I really want to bring on a parent, and I'm hoping that Melanie will be the first of many that will join us on our podcast, so that we can hear their perspective and their story. And, most of our parents that we're working with, they aren't just a parent of the kid that we're providing services for. Like I mentioned a minute ago, there are so many other things, right? They wear so many other hats in life, and there's so many other parts to their life, and there are other kids in the household potentially, and pets,
yes,
and life, and all the things. And so since Melanie has written a few books, one particular to her daughter, which she'll tell us about here, more about here in a minute. But I just thought, what a great opportunity. So I reached out to her and asked her if she would be willing to come on to just talk about her perspective as a parent. Yes, she is a parent with a child with autism. She's one parent of many, and so like her story, it may be, is her story, not everyone's story. But I think the more parent perspectives that we can hear, it can help us to be better providers, and it can help us to towards our journey of providing quality services. And then also like the big piece that we're always talking about, collaborating. Mm-hmm. Collaborating isn't just amongst, BCBA clinicians, and like in the medical field. Collaboration, probably the most important person that should be part of that collaboration are parents. And of course the learners themselves, if they're able to participate in those conversations too. But.
Yeah. I'll just say one thing and then I'll let you go for it, Melanie. But I think, especially business owners,
if they're no longer providing those services, it's really easy to forget what it's like really quickly. So I think it's always good to have that perspective on the podcast so they can re-remember, right?
Yeah.
So they can take this, you know, 45 minutes or whatever and say, oh, yeah, okay, I remember this now. And then, you know, kind of work with that.
Yeah. So, Melanie, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what led you to writing your book and introduce your book to us and all the things.
Okay. So my name is Melanie Thurston. I'm a critical care nurse. And actually, for 20 years, exclusively, I was a cardiovascular ICU nurse, meaning basically if someone had heart surgery and that I would be taking care of them straight from the OR. About 11 years into that journey, I picked up a dual role as something called an ECMO specialist. ECMO stands for extracorporeal membrane oxygen. And basically, that is a specialized kind of life support that if your heart or your lungs fail, and I'm, you know, kind of simplifying this, of course, that I have the ability to run the machine that is supporting oxygenation and blood flow and sometimes supporting the heart, depending on what the need is. Almost 3 years ago, I moved exclusively into that role and more out of the nursing field, although I do still, you know, obviously have my nursing license. I still do nursing tasks and stuff like that. You know, we still have to know medications and everything about the patient and all this other good stuff. So I'm still sort of a little bit of a dual role, but more exclusively that. Kind of what led to that and even writing the books is through our journey over the years with our daughter with autism, my husband has been the stay-at-home dad, and he is phenomenal with that and taking care of our daughter and our other two kids. He gets her in ways that I don't. I'm not even going to lie to you, and I am very free about that in Caitlin's book. I kind of refer to it as Caitlin's book. But I have a joint condition that has led to my joints breaking down. And after, I guess, I don't know, facing my ninth surgery, I just started praying. I'm a Christian. I started praying. I said, Lord, I just don't know what to do. And I felt him very clearly say, write a book. And, you know, that first book has basically turned into more or less my testimony. And I did write a chapter about our autism journey. And the interesting thing is I put in there, because I had to republish it, and I looked at it, and I had a line in there that said, this journey could be its very own book. And now 2 years later, here we are.
There you go. You put it out there.
Here we are, you know. Then led to a second book through a series of just, it would take forever to explain why, but, and then eventually led to this third book. And this book is called Mom, I'm Mater, My Life as an Autism Mom. And most people that have kids any age now know who Mater is. Mater is from Cars. So I'm still doing this dual role thing. I'm going to go back to work tomorrow night and do what I call my primary job as being an ECMO specialist. I'm honored to have the chance to get on here and speak with you guys, and hopefully I can shed some insight as to what it's like being the mom, being the parent, encourage some people, give them some hope that you can survive this, that in the midst of the hard, but also what I really, really want to do, I can't thank the early interventionists enough that worked with Caitlin. April, you, and I remember Shay, and there's a few others that stand out in my mind that were so amazing walking us through this journey, doing the paperwork. You know, at the time when Caitlin was diagnosed, I was a critical care nurse already, and I know medical paperwork, and it was overwhelming for me. So just even that aspect of it, doing all the paperwork and getting all the consults in and getting everything lined up, and you feel like you're in the fight of your life. And I can't thank you enough for what you guys did to ameliorate that process, to get the ball rolling, and, you know, telling us exactly what form to fill out and how to fill it out, and just walking us through it, because it is – if it was overwhelming for me and I'm used to seeing a lot of this paperwork, I can't imagine what it's like for someone not in the medical field. So first and foremost, let me just say that, because that part even by itself can just be overwhelming, just looking at the reams of paperwork you have to do. And now everything's on the computer. You can't even see it as you're doing it. So I can't even imagine. We did everything hard copy 20 years ago. So, so that's a big thing right there. So I guess that's where I just really want to start is if I can encourage people to into this journey, you can survive.
Yeah,
you can survive. So that's I think a big reason why the Lord called me to write her story.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that so much. I think that is such a really great message. So many, whether you're a mom of a kid with autism or whatever struggles you have, like, we're all here together, right? And you can survive. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that about paperwork, because one of the things that we talk about a lot is the intake process, right? And, you know, once you have a learner and a family that comes to you, walking them through the paperwork. And so some of the questions we get from business owners are, what's the best way to do that, right? Do you send it in an email? Do you, you know, HIPAA compliant, of course. Do you, you know, have a link on your website? Do you mail it to them? Do you have them come into the office? Do you go to them? And one of the things that, like, over the years, and I've learned from people that I used to work with before I even started my own agency and before Steven started his, is, like, that there is so much going on at the point where a parent is reaching out for early intervention and ABA. And, you know, you have, and we'll talk more about this in a few minutes, but you have, like, the grief process going on. You have your own life in general going on. You have others, you know, other children to deal with. You have so much, right, that that paperwork itself can be so overwhelming. And I hear you saying that, like, someone helping you to walk you through it and answer questions is helpful. But outside of that, do you have any advice or perspective to give to business owners of how they can better support families during that initial intake service, you know, while they're getting things rolling?
I would say if you could introduce everything in a bundle of some kind, whether you ask the parent and say, what is your best way to fill things out? Are you a paper person? Because I'll be honest with you, I'm 52 years old. I'm still a paper person.
Me too.
For me, hand me a packet of paperwork. And then that way I don't have to worry about, like, losing my place on a page on the phone or on the computer. But someone else might be incredibly tech savvy and say, you know what, I can handle all this online. Just send everything to me. Might be able to flip back and forth better than, you know, because we're all different. I even started nursing. I started paper charting and we had our ICU trifold and everything. And there's still days that we go back and we're like, I miss my trifold, you know. the computer goes down and the old nurses want our trifolds back. I would say introduce and streamline all the paperwork, all the forms that need to be filled out, the essential things that have to be filled out in a package first. Put everything in front of them and say, this is where we need to start. These are all the papers you need to start off. And as we get into it, if there's something we need to do to tailor it, we can introduce, you know, a specific paper. Do we have a different specific need for your child or your family that might come up? And that's on, you know, for your end, you know, all the paperwork involved in that, the ins and outs, and it is really, it's so much. I actually got in contact with Caitlin's caseworker and had her send me, like, hey, send me a couple links. Let me look at some stuff. And she sent me so many links. And even now, just looking at it, was like, whoa, it is a lot. So I would say for parents just starting this overwhelming, arduous journey, and like you said, the grieving process, you know, get all the paperwork that's absolutely necessary in one form first, and, you know, hand them that. if there's brochures that can come with us. Some parents are going to want to do a support program of some kind. They're going to want to join maybe a support program. I did not have the opportunity to do that because, and I'll be perfectly honest with you, my manager even asked me, she said, why don't you join like a support program for other autistic families? And I said, to be honest with you, I'm immersed in this world what feels like 24/7, and I'm working four nights a week, and I really don't want to spend my time off staying even more immersed in it. I want to do some normal things, you know, because you feel like you've left the entire world of normal. Even going out to a fast food restaurant to grab a bite to eat, you never know what can happen. You never know how your child's going to react. And so even those little things, like I just want to enjoy stuff that a typical family would do that doesn't have a special needs child. I just, you know, I didn't want to join a support group. I just didn't. Other people might want to, but for, you know, that could be in your packet of information, maybe a brochure that lists support groups in the area. You know, whether they be a faith-based support group, whether it be just a, you know, just a normal support group, whatever that person might need. One thing that came up with Caitlin was, you know, respite care, maybe a list of phone numbers that can be called, could be in another brochure or something like that. And to make those things available so a parent can have something to resource to say, hey, if you need a break even for an hour or two, here are some trusted people that would be able to watch over, you know, if you don't have family in the area. We had some family in the area, but none that were really comfortable watching Caitlin. My two best girlfriends are the two that I would still call. And that's nothing against the family that we have in the area. I'm from Pennsylvania and I live in South Carolina. So it's nothing against the family in the area. They're just not real comfortable taking care of her. So, you know, when we need a break, which is unfortunately not as often as what we'd like, I reach out to one of my two best friends, and they know her. They know her meds. They know her food allergies. They know her little idiosyncrasies and stuff like that. That would be a huge thing, because just having everything in front of you all at one time, even though it seems like it's a lot, but you've got it all there. You've got all the paperwork there. It can all be filled out. You know, whatever format that they want to use. But what you guys did helping us fill out the paperwork just was phenomenal. It was just, you know, I can't credit you guys enough. I still remember so vividly those early days and all the paperwork and everything getting filled out. Once we got everything filled out, it wasn't the process of starting ABA was just really more working through scheduling, you know, for us. And yeah. I'm sure a lot of parents probably say the same thing, but I think having a big packet, even though it seems like it would be a lot, but having everything there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very helpful. That's helpful information to know. Did you have a question?
Yeah,
I saw you writing something down. So I wanted to,
I'm just curious looking back at it all now, right? Like hindsight is 2020, obviously, but like, is there anything in those first initial sessions through that first initial process that you would maybe give some advice to parents, or something that you wish you could have said to your team, your ABA team, that you know now that you just didn't know then, right? Is there something that would have helped that process go smoother?
I'm filtering back through my mind with my medical background, I kind of went into a state of denial over the fact that Caitlin was on the spectrum. Like, I look back now and see pictures, and I just think, how could I have been so blind to see the signs? But I remember sitting there and looking through my PEDS nursing book and looking through the signs of, you know, what they had listed as signs of autism, you know, in the book. And you know, there's parents I've talked to, and they're like, I think there's something up. Can you give us a word of advice with our, you know, with our child? And looking back now, giving a parent, you know, sometimes kids get referred while they're in school, and they're like, you know, we think you should have your child evaluated. And that's probably that is almost feels like a death knell. We think your child should be evaluated. I mean, maybe everything's fine, but, and those are hard words to hear.
Yeah.
And for me, being able to see the list of all the signs of what we could be looking at, helped me, because it helped me kind of judge, like, okay, where are we here? What are we looking at? Having a list of, you know, possible signs and symptoms, indicators of whether we are actually truly on the autism spectrum, on the PDD, that pervasive developmental delay spectrum, whether it's just something, and I say just, whether it is more of a sensory processing disorder, because there's so much crossover and all that stuff. And so many kids with autism do have sensory processing issues. So I don't know if that would be helpful, if that would be helpful to other parents to have lists of this is what it could be. The other thing, maybe like these are the tests that we should do to rule out whether or not we're dealing with, is it's a physical problem. I remember when Caitlin had her hearing tested, and what a honestly terrible experience that actually turned out to be. And they wanted to retest her, and I put my foot down because it was beyond awful. To this day, Caitlin still cannot see an animated, like a little motorized toy without being terrified. And that comes from when she had her hearing test. The little monkey, you know, with the symbols, bad, so bad. Mm-hmm. But anything like that, a moving toy that with parts and noise, she still has issues with that. But maybe, you know, tests that you can anticipate that we'll have to work through to make sure that this is the appropriate diagnosis. You know, the hearing tests, are they going to need an EEG? Our doctor drew an entire panel of labs and urine studies. We had an MRI with sedation. That is the story of that is included in my book. And I'm sorry, I hate to say it. I still laugh thinking about that. It was quite the ordeal, but for a critical care nurse, you know, seeing my husband's reaction, April, you'll laugh when you read that chapter. You'll know when yes. you hit it.
For those of you listen before we start recording, I let Melanie know I ordered her book like months ago. And as you guys know, sometimes things getting from the U.S. to Canada, it takes a little longer than we like, especially these days. And so, so I am very excited about reading Melanie's book and about sharing it with you guys. And so I promise I will follow up after that. So yeah, I'm the more I hear you talk about it, I'm like, I want to read that book so bad. But yeah, like you were like, I apologize for laughing. Sometimes we just have to laugh about these things, right? Like you just have to laugh about it sometimes. So you don't do the opposite.
Yeah. There's an absolute laugh to keep from crying, but
exactly.
You have to sometimes, but you know, I'm just thinking back, like what we did different, you know, in healthcare, what we call the differential diagnosis, like what could it possibly be?
Exactly.
Are we looking at this, A, B, C, D, or some combination right. of all of them. And I think that's really probably one of the harder things with autism is that, you know, there's so many components under. We had her tested at a different facility, and they had us do checklists on various things, what we saw behavior-wise and what they saw behavior-wise. And we came back together and kind of like met in the middle with them. And at that time, she tested high on the scale because at that time, autism and Asperger's were considered separate diagnoses. I have opinions on that, but anyway. But she tested high on the scale for autism, Asperger's, ADD, and ADHD. And that's one of those things that, you know, on those scales, you don't want to test high on the scales. So, right. You know, normally you want that high score on the test and not this one. So there's so much crossover. And as we've gotten further along, you know, then you add in possible other diagnoses. Do we have anxiety? Do we have depression? Are we seeing other things with that as well? Are you going to see it right away? You know, now Caitlin is who she is, and she's been who she is for so long. And we do have her on medicines because she does tend to have violent outbursts if she doesn't have her medicine on board. But, you know, what is going on with that child? Do they even recognize that there's something different with them? You know, some higher functioning, what we would have considered back in the day, quote unquote, Asperger's, who are, you know, can function in school but maybe don't have the best social skills, you know, which you would kind of think of. Those folks, I've worked with people like that, and mm-hmm. they know that they're not, that they have something different. Mm-hmm. And so for that child, are they going to have more anxiety and depression because they know they don't, quote unquote, fit in with everybody else? Is that another issue that needs to be addressed? It's hard because a lot of this stuff, we start off in one place and then you start muddling through and start the therapy, and then you might uncover 10 other things. So it's hard. It's, you know, we did the PD. We had the opportunity to have the PDD waiver. And I think, April, that's where I met you guys. We had the PDD waiver in South Carolina. And so we had 3 years of combined in-home therapy plus when she was in school. So, and I remember just, you know, there were days that it waxes and wanes. And that's an important thing too, is not every day is going to be a good day. You know, so much with ABA therapy is focused on positive reinforcement, which is great. Like if we accomplish this, then you get, you know, whatever that child is motivated by. For Caitlin, she was motivated by being able to watch little videos, you know, shorts and clips on people's phones. She's very much a movie girl. You know, and that was wonderful. And it's still something that we use, that positive reinforcement, you know, of, you know, we're working towards whatever. And that was a phrase that you guys used a lot. But then trying to figure out each child, I mean, is kind of tough too. So I guess maybe one thing that could be included is, you know, on this first evaluation, this is something that you might see is, well, you'll be talking with your healthcare provider about some tests that we could run to figure out if there's something else going on, and include, they might want blood work, they might want urine samples, they might want, you know, to do metabolic testing, they might want to do an EEG, an MRI, some other things to be able to rule out physical cause. So that could be part of your initial setup if it's not already been communicated mm-hmm. with the parents. Every physician is different. We fought tooth and nail to be able to get Caitlin seen because we got to the point where we knew something was different. She has regressive autism, when we knew something was different, and we had to fight. But, you know, another parent might come at it from a different angle, and being able to explain, hey, this is something that could be, that we could work through and determine whether or not there is some physical cause behind what we're seeing.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. It's so much. Like, so you're dealing with a diagnosis, you're dealing with like, well, is it this? Is it that? Is it this? You know, you're dealing with, okay, then that involves so much testing. Mm-hmm. And so that's not even getting you to the point of services where, you know, you finally land where you're okay, finally somebody can help now. We've got services starting, we got paperwork going. And then learning what the service is, you mm-hmm. know, like most of the people we, you know, work with provide ABA, we have, you know, like there's some speech and mm-hmm. OT, other therapies too, but like typically with ABA, it's such an intensive service. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe even if you've had a parent who came to you and they've had like OT and they've maybe got an hour of speech every week or something like that, right? And then they come to ABA and the provider does the assessment, right. And then they recommend like 15 to 40 hours a week. Whoa, what? And whether they want to come, you know, whether it's in your home or whether you have to provide, like, you know, access to get your child to the clinic, right? So can you speak a little bit about, like, what that's like, you know, dealing with the grief, but then handling all the overwhelm of, okay, well, what does this mean? You know, we have to have people in our house now 3 hours every afternoon.
I can't imagine someone in my home seeing everything, right? For 40 hours a week. Sure.
Like, one hand, you're like excited. You're like, no, maybe excited is not the right word, but you're hopeful. Like, okay, maybe somebody can help.
Very said. You know, we live in a small town, and they say, you know, we think Caitlin could really benefit if you drove her up to the main center and we could work with her there. And that was solidly 40 minutes away. And that's a lot of driving when you're talking. You want me to drive her there how many days a week? 40 minutes each way. And, you know, you can write off you can write off the gas money. You can write off the mileage, which basically amounts to not really much by the time you actually get through on taxes. But then you do. And I remember, you know, here I am, I'm working, you know, I work third shift and, you know, trying to get some sleep in. There was a couple times I went over to my best friend's and slept because it was just bad, you know. And it wasn't you guys. It was just autism can be just like really, really difficult and draining from time to time. Just moments here and there. You know, so there was a couple times when it was when
you don't say
that there was gonna be therapy like back to back. There was a couple times I did. I went to my best friend's house and slept, and she was so gracious about that because I knew otherwise I had to go to work. And that's even one thing I tell my patients in the hospital that talk to their families and say, you know, we're in this for the long haul. My patients will stay on support 2, 3, 4 weeks sometimes, and then they feel guilty about, I have to go home and I have to do laundry and I have to do this. And I'm like, and that's another portion that I want to bring out there is you still have to live and function in the midst of this diagnosis, in the midst of this enormous, what feels like upheaval. You still have to maintain some sense of normalcy. You know, at first it was when we first started doing in-home therapy, it was like, you know, you tried to get everything straightened up and made sure the dishes were done and made sure this was done. And because, you know, you come over, people are going to come over your house and you feel like, you know, almost like you're having a impromptu like dinner play date or something like that. You want everything put away. And then the further along you get in the journey, you're like, you know what? I'm just going to do laundry while you're here. And that's where we are today.
I'm going to interrupt you for 1 second. Like I would like to send the message out there to everyone to make this part who's providing in-home services, to make it a part of your policy, to make it a part of your training for your staff, to like teach your staff when they're going into people's homes to be so gracious and non-judgmental. Yeah. Like they can think what they want to think, but by golly, they better not be judgy to these parents, right? Because I mean, I meant this truly to my core, but like I'm like, hey, listen, I'm not here to look at your house. Like, you want to go see my house? I'll show you my house, right? Like, we're not like, you know, because that is, I think, one of the biggest things, like, at the beginning can be so hard for a parent. It's like, okay, on top of all of this, now I have to make sure my house is in order for someone to come in and, like, work here. And so of course, like, you know, keep the toilet paper rolling in the bathroom. I mean, that's great.
One of our therapists said, you know, Caitlin really, really took a shine to, and she was training another therapist who was coming in. And, you know, unfortunately I was told this right after I found out my mom died. The therapist was actually at the house when I got the news that my mom died in a house fire. And I was standing over at the dryer about to transfer laundry into the dryer. And it was 9:00 in the morning. I had just gotten back from Pennsylvania because my mom's health was failing. And I knew that she was going to pass within a matter of days to maybe a couple weeks. And I will never forget that moment. And because of two reasons, my brother called me. It was 9 o'clock on a Friday morning. And he said, the house is gone. Mom is gone. And I don't know where Pops is. And my dad had been airlifted to a burn unit. We didn't know where. He got put in as a John Doe because of the fire taking place when it did. And I remember just hitting my knees in our washroom and just letting out this keening wail. And I heard the therapist say something along the lines of, what's wrong with her? And that kind of like, and why that stuck in my psyche 17 and a half years later. But the other thing that came about with this therapist is we found out, you know, and here we are, we had another child. Erica is 20 months younger than Caitlin, and, dealing with me working third shift, 48 hours a week, sometimes 60 hours a week. And, our autistic child and my mom with her health issues. She had a lot of issues, mm-hmm. but ended up having a stroke, was addicted to narcotics, and just a whole horrible road with that. And we're dealing with all this at the same time, all at the same time. And I heard that therapist told the other therapist, their house is always just such a mess. Well, you come on in. You come on in and you take this life. Because at that point in time, you know, I would drive into work listening to Christian music and cry on the way to work. I would drive home from work and cry knowing I was going home and I didn't know if I was going to be able to sleep that day. You know, much less everything else, you know, I never will forget that feeling of that. Mm-hmm. She was so nice to our face, but then to hear that she told a therapist behind our back, their house is always messy. And I, to this, every time she came in after that, I mean, I'm a Christian and I have to forgive her, you know, but did I ever trust her? Actually, no, I didn't. I sure did. You know, she did well with Caitlin. She didn't stay much longer after that. We never said anything about it because it was one of those, you know, he said, she said kind of things. And the other therapist told us, she's like, I don't understand why she would even be looking at, you know, that you have dishes out and you're doing laundry. You know, at least you're doing your laundry. And I'm like, well, I mean, you have to do laundry, you know. I mean, eventually you're going to run out of clean clothes. So eventually it's going to, you know, so, and I guess
you can wear dirty clothes or do laundry.
There's just one thing going on. And that's what I tell my families at the hospital too, is you still have to live life. I'm here to take care of your loved one. And if you have to go home and sleep because you've been up for 2.5 days solid, then you go home and sleep, you know? And I never thought of ABA therapy as a babysitting service. I wanted to integrate with them, but at the same time, we did take the opportunity when you guys were there to throw in a load of laundry, to, especially if it was something that you were trying to work with her and with her intensely and uninterrupted, because there are times then the therapy needs to be that. And if the parent is trying to figure out like, hey, what are you doing? Right. And your autistic child who, it's mom, you know, it's mom. I can go to mom. There are times that you need to have that uninterrupted therapy time. And truthfully, we did. We took that time to throw a little laundry in, to do some dishes, to do whatever. I mean, we wouldn't vacuum or anything. It was like super noisy. You know, and that's, I guess, a takeaway for parents too, is you know, don't use it as a babysitting service because right. it's not that. Make a point to try to figure out, like, what are we working on that day? And maybe that's one thing that you could, that therapists could do when they walk in. Hey, today we're going to do, to the best of our ability, depending on how things go, we're going to try to focus on X, Y, and Z. And so we're going to block out this amount of time where I need to work with your child by, you know, with just them in a quiet environment. And that might actually help set up where a parent can do a little bit of planning too. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, this is my time that I can, while they're doing this independently, I know what they're working on, but I can throw a load of laundry in, or I can, you know, and you can still be available and throw laundry in. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm gonna chill out. I'm gonna take a nap. We're not talking like that, but you know, but maybe that would be something helpful too. Mm-hmm. Is to set up with the knowledge of if your child is just not handling it that day, then you have to drop back and punt, you know, because you're always going to have those moments. But hey, this is what we're going to try to work on today, and we're going to try to do this, and right. I'm going to need this much time with just them, and then maybe we can, you know, we can work to, maybe there can be a time of working together with a parent. That might be something that's helpful too, is setting up like timelines and,
yeah,
you know, that way there's a little bit of scheduling that's,
like expectation, like just understanding what the goal is for today. And it might be different, you know, because I know sometimes like it was maybe not as often back in the day, but these days, like the BCBA will come out into the home a lot more often. And mm-hmm. so sometimes yeah. it's not even just the tech, it's the tech and the BCBA or mm-hmm. like someone's training.
Hey, ABA business owners, struggling to navigate the complex world of ABA practice management?
You're not alone. We've been there. And that's why we created the ABA Business Leaders Membership. It's your how-to guide for everything you need to run a successful, ethical ABA practice.
From compliance to culture, from billing to hiring, we've got you covered with in-depth videos and insider advice you'll wish you had years ago.
Absolutely. But guess what? You don't have to figure it out alone. Our ABA Business Leaders membership isn't just a guide, it's your growth accelerator, featuring 34 CEUs to keep you and your team on the cutting edge.
That's right. Plus, you get exclusive access to content you can't find anywhere else. Think webinars, live Q&As, real-life success stories from practices making it happen.
And the community aspect is unbeatable. Imagine being connected to a network of ABA business owners, sharing, learning, and evolving together.
No more second-guessing your business decisions or wondering if there's a better way. With the ABA Business Leaders membership, clarity, confidence, and continuous learning are what you're signing on for.
So, if you're all in on elevating your ABA practice, join us. It's time your business not just survived, but thrived.
Head on over to 3piesquared.com and check out the ABA Business Leaders membership. Let's take your practice to the next level together.
Maybe you have three people. And so, you know, having that even the communication to ahead of time as much as possible of like, hey, here's what's happening today. You know, here's our plan. This is what we're going to try to do. One of the things that, side note, before I go to the next question, one of our friends who has a child with autism, who's, mm-hmm. he's, you know, pretty high needs along the lines of Caitlin, she said, and she's a BCBA today, but she said to some of our younger techs, when we were talking to some of our younger techs, she was like, listen, guys, because mm-hmm. some of the younger techs would be like, oh, well, the mom's always yeah. blah, blah when we're there. Like, mm-hmm. like kind of like these like young 20-somethings like are like not quite understanding what it's like to be a mom anyways and have a household. I'm overgeneralizing, but you know what I mean. And so it's like, oh, but and she like was quick to say, okay, guys, my child had ABA therapy for years, and my child was a handful. My child did not sleep. I had all of these concerns. She said, do you know what I would do sometimes when my therapist was there? She said, I'd grab the best junk food from the top of my pantry, and I would hide it down to the basement, and I would turn on the junkiest, trashiest show I could watch, and I would check out for 15 minutes, you know? She said, but I kept the volume really low so nobody would know. Like, even if you want to do that for some time, that's okay, right? Parents need to be able to live in their home. They need to be able to have a break. But if you communicate to them the expectations, one of the things that sometimes we hear a lot is, like, about parent training, right? Because also with a lot of the funders now, the insurance is, that's a big portion of what's expected. It definitely parent participation should be expected. And depending on the situation of the home, sometimes some parents are more apt to be involved than others. But it's important to have that perspective of understanding that just because maybe a parent isn't like, yeah, sure, let's gung-ho, let's do some parent training today, doesn't mean that they're not invested in their child and they're not wanting what's best for their child. They have all of this other stuff going on too. And perhaps, you know, communication could go a long way. Explain, you working with a parent, like, okay, here are parent training goals. Here's what we need to accomplish over the next 6 months of the authorization. Here are your goals for your child. That's a whole other conversation, making sure that you find out what the child's goals even are.
Caitlin was 7 by the time she was potty trained.
Yeah.
And even that was enormous. I do deal with that in the book. I deal with some sensitive topics in the book, just FYI. We talk about some of the issues that she had with potty training. I don't get graphic about it. It's not, you know, I tried to make it a little bit funny, but,
right.
Well, cause you know, you kind of have to, but at the time it wasn't funny, but looking back now, you can find a lighter side of it. One thing too is, I think looking forward, maybe as you're getting closer to that end of time with ABA, where, because I remember when you guys, and I don't remember who was working with Caitlin, but I remember as we were moving through things, and they said, she's met all of her goals. She's met all of her goals with ABA therapy, and we've done, I mean, you know, you guys had done everything that you could. She had mastered the skills that you guys had. And so then as a parent, you're going, oh no, now what do I do? You know, not that you haven't been involved, but then you realize that you've come to depend on this ABA, this person that's coming to your home and helped with your child and might be more patient with your child because they understand a little bit more deeply, you know, what they're doing. But I think even moving forward, I think towards the end of therapy, maybe having a couple sessions where you sit down and be like, hey, so here's what things might look like. Here's what things, and some of it, if you have your child in school, and I know in America, we have our IEP meetings, which are probably the most depressing things ever. I'm sorry. I avoided them. I went to a couple, and when you hear the same thing, your child's social skills are between 18 and 24 months. And you hear that time after time after time. After a while, you're like, okay, thanks so much. You know, it can be daunting and very depressing. But I think setting expectations and moving forward, like, hey, here is a path. Here are some paths that could happen. Is your child going to progress to the point where they could be integrated? We did try that 1 year to get Caitlin into a learning disabled classroom. I'm not going to say that it was a light it, you know, throw gas at him and a match on a light it on fire fail, but it was ended up being a fail. But I have to say that we made a valiant effort. So then where are we looking to after ABA? What are some paths that we could be on? Where could we be looking at for your child? Because one thing that's been very, very difficult is, and I talk to other parents too, that their kids are older. A dear friend of mine who watches her grandson had no idea, like, there was a different kind of waiver out there to get him into a community long-term care where he can be somewhere that he'll go every day, that he'll have something that's a more structured environment and stuff like that. And that's a big path moving forward that maybe towards the end of ABA that it could be talked about, like, hey, let's have some conversations about, you know, here's where we are here, here's where we see your child, but this, you know, of course, obviously we don't have a crystal ball, we can't see into the future, but here's some different paths that can take, and what kind of conversations need to arise after that point. Are we talking about they could be integrated? Are we talking about they could be mainstreamed, that they could be mm-hmm. there could be a job placement? Are we talking about, like in Caitlin's situation, that she will never leave home, that she will always have mm-hmm. to have supervision? You know, we are very, very happy with the fact that she's in her adult daycare. And it is, you know, structured enough for her, and she does activities that she enjoys. You know, we got to the point in school where we're like, why are we trying to force this kid to learn math? She's not going to, you know, we had faced reality at that point.
Right.
And that's another one that's really hard too, is like, when do we start talking about that this is where your child is going to be, that they're not going to be able to hold time a part-time job, because it happens. For every child that you see that, oh, you know, we got a mainstreamed, and, you know, they're talking about being able to work in a job. That is amazing, and that's great. But for every one of those children, I don't know what the statistics are, how many more kids are like my daughter, are like Caitlin, where, okay, now we have to face the reality that she will never leave home. What do we do from there? And I think it would be a great conversation to have maybe towards the end of ABA therapy, when, you know, the last like couple months of it, to say, these could be the paths, and start doing some prep work from that point. I don't feel like this is my personal opinion, and everybody could come from a different place on this, so I don't want to invite like negativity or hate or anything like that, but I don't feel like the school prepared us well enough, and I don't feel like they had all the resources of what to do next for Caitlin. And by that point, we had become very, very dependent on them. And so then we get her out of school, and her teachers were wonderful. I mean, they showered her. We opted not to let her, quote unquote, graduate. She was going to be with 1,000 other kids. And I was like, she's going to spontaneously combust down there. It's going to be too much noise. This is going to be terrible. Are we letting her march because we want this? Is she even going to recognize the significance of it? You know, so we mm-hmm. opted not to, because we thought it would just end up being a miserable experience for her. You know, right. We've had to take her out of our church a few times in the middle of a service if it got a little lively. You know, so what are you going to do when 1,000 kids are like literally screaming in joy and excitement? You know, is that going to trigger a meltdown that's mm-hmm. bad enough that you're not going to recover for the rest of the day? You know, but looking back, we didn't have a really great plan leaving school. Maybe she can do this and maybe this. And, you know, does there need to be better planning with special needs classrooms? That's a hard one. You know, I can only speak to where she was. And they were wonderful with her. They took wonderful care of her, but there were just some pieces that I wish that we had started addressing earlier on that we didn't get. So I don't know, maybe that's something that could be included. Mm-hmm. Like, here's some different pathways that you could be looking at.
Yes, definitely. I think that is something that a lot of ABA providers are doing more now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've learned, I'm like, wow, that's so many years ago. There's a lot that we've learned and we've grown over the last couple of decades. But that is something
like even services, right? Like I can remember when insurance started covering autism in Virginia, it was like 2 to 11, right?
They would
cut it off at 11. I think now that they've expanded,
and all of these kids are now in their 20s. They've had to move. But that is a very good point. If it's not something that you already have in practice, even when you're at early intervention, even when you're working with the little ones, like you have to always have in mind, they're going to be an adult one day, right? They're going to grow up. They're going to be they're going to be depending on their abilities, right? Of where that path's going to take them. But we have to always be planning for, they're not always going to be this little 4-year old. their bodies are going to grow, and so that is very important to have that transition planning and involving the parents in that. We're coming up towards the end of our hour, but I did want to give you opportunity to touch on a couple of things that I know are important to you.
I remember asking you guys, and you guys were great about it. And it wasn't a deliberate, like, we're absolutely excluding your other child deliberately. It was never, ever that. It's just, we're coming in here and we're working with, with your child that is, whatever special needs, autism, whatever, it is that you guys are coming in and working with. I know it's primarily that. But I remember asking because we were seeing our other daughter have some moments of frustration, moments of even at, cause I think we started her ABA therapy, I think when she was 4 or 5. So it would have made our younger child, like 3-ish. And at that age, she's saying, she recognizes at that age that she's being, kind of excluded and treated differently. And hey, Caitlin's getting all this attention and Caitlin's getting all this and that. And, and not recognizing that it's not necessarily the best reason why Caitlin's getting all this attention. And so we asked, like, hey, on a couple of the things, can you include her on, whatever activity would be appropriate, even if it's just for a couple of minutes, and integrative, and also that helped Caitlin a little bit more with some integrative play, rather than just that solo play that autistic kids tend to do. They stay in their own little world and they're comfortable there, and please don't make me move because I'm good here. But it helped with that with that kind of play, and also helped our younger child just feel not excluded. Again, like I said, it was never anything like that. It's just one of those things you don't think of until you're sitting there watching and you're like, oh, let's pull her into this, and then what that also did for us as parents is it helped me to learn how to help them play together. Cause I didn't have a clue, what we could do to help my kids learn to play together. I just didn't, I was out in left field with a lot of this stuff. And to be honest with you, I was not a kid that played a lot. I learned to read when I was really very young and was an avid reader and was reading way above my age grade. And so I never played very much as a kid. So trying to learn to play with my kids was actually challenging. So it helped me as a parent also learn to play. So, even if it's a possibility to have all the, have all the family members do an activity for a minute or two, I think it got to the point, and April, we were talking about it before when we were, when we had our first meeting, that you would bring one bag of toys for the child that you were working with, and then you would bring another bag of toys for any other kids that, that might have been there. And I thought that was what an amazing idea. What a great, fantastic idea. But being able to incorporate that, pull that other child in, to avoid the jealousy, to help him feel included, but also to help him learn to play together, because kids play by instinct, You know, kids play. They have to, I mean, we have to teach them how to share, you know. We have to teach them those kinds of things, but they play by instinct. You know, it's something inborn with a lot of kids. So, you know, having to teach them that is really so big and so important. Touching on the community aspect of it, one thing that I do talk about in my book, one of the biggest mistakes that I felt like that we made as parents, and of course, you don't, hindsight again being 2020, and autism being much less frequently diagnosed 20 years ago than what it is now, unfortunately, but right. We isolated because, frankly, isolating right. is just easier. We have a diagnosis that honestly we don't even get the ins and outs of. Early on, you don't know what to expect. So the easiest thing is you pull your child away. You pull your family away. You wrap everybody up in a bubble and you cocoon them. And that way everybody's safe and nothing can get in there and upset the apple cart. We are looking back now going, wow, could we have done that better? Was it really a mistake as so much as could we have done this better? Could we have done better teaching and showing other people, hey, this is how, this is one thing that works for Caitlin to help her calm down if she gets upset. You know, and I think really there were some fails, like trying to discipline a special needs child. How do you discipline, you know, and that's really so intuitive. You have to know when this is my child is just being a typical kid. And they're having a bratty moment, you know, because they all have them. How do you discipline them versus, oh, no, this is really a sensory issue or we're, you know, we're about to melt down. That one, that just has to come with time and intuition. Like, parenting fails with disciplining, you know. But what can we tell other people? Like, even when we tried to keep Caitlin, so my husband and I could actually sit together in church without having to worry about Caitlin running off or whatever, when our church was real gracious in allowing her to stay in a younger age Sunday, you know, classroom during church for quite a while. But, you know, then you talk to that person one-on-one about it rather than making it like, hey, let's pull all the leaders of children's church together and say, we have a special needs child. This is what's going to work well for her. This is what won't work well. And if it doesn't work well, then, you know, by all means, please, you know, text me and or have us come get her. And, you know, because there's going to be moments like that. It happens with other kids. But that was probably the worst mistake that we made was we isolated.
Right.
We pulled back because it was honestly isolating is easier than trying to teach. And especially when you're trying to teach and you still are trying to figure out what's going on yourself. But it's so dynamic. It's so evolving. It's so, you know, there's a lot that, like I said, is intuitive, but there's, it's such a living, breathing almost process of we're having to learn to adapt to this, but I'm going to tell you what we're seeing along the way.
Right.
And that is one thing that I would tell folks is listen, you know, can it be embarrassing when your kid has a meltdown in the middle of Walmart? Absolutely. Have I pulled Caitlin and had her under one arm and walked her out of Walmart more than one time? I mean, I couldn't do it now. You know, but what we had to do it then, you know, and sometimes that's going to happen. It's going to happen. You know, if you can head it off at the pass and, you know, Caitlin's biggest trigger still is hearing babies cry. She hears babies cry and oh my goodness, it after a while, and you can hear her ramp up. She'll say,
yeah,
Dad, what's wrong with the baby? What's wrong with the baby? Why is the baby crying? Dad, can you stop the baby crying? Make the baby stop. Dad, what's wrong with the baby? And her voice escalates and escalates. And this happened actually at a library where someone basically had a newborn that was wailing for 20 minutes. And by the time they got outside the library, she was done, triggered. Through, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, I mean, right. That poor Caitlin.
It's like, turn the off switch on that baby. Like, make it stop.
There was nothing. There was nothing that Frankie could do. He just had to, he tried to hustle him through as quick as he could. And there was nothing he could do.
Yeah.
It was, but teaching forward and teaching people how to work with your child, I've had so many people over the years, so I don't know how you do it. And the answer is by the grace of God. But, honestly, I don't either. there are days that I just, that I don't know either. You just hang on by your toenails some days, and some days you're like, I have got this. And other days you're like, not even a minute of it.
Is it that parenting? Oh, it's a struggle, especially when you add special needs and all that spiciness into the mix. Mm-hmm. It can really test you to the, yes, for sure. And so I do think that that is something that we as providers can help our families with, is how to, community outreach.
Yeah. You make up a pamphlet, mm-hmm. For your child. I mean, it's not terribly expensive to go to Office Depot and, have something printed up, or a handout rather, something cheaper. You can print off your own computer. Helpful tips. That was something I almost worked with the pediatric nurses is, like, hey, what is, if you have an autistic child come through, and I took care of an autistic child recently, and I said, okay, what are their triggers? What calms them down? What sets them off? What calms them down? Those are two of the biggest things. Some kids, it's going to be bright lights, and some it's this and some it's that. And okay, well, what can we do to soothe them? What can we do that's going to, Caitlin still, she does not like light touch, just a little touch on her arm. And to calm her, we will still put a hand, but have your hand on her arm where you can actually feel it, not just this little baby touch, because for her, it felt like fire. Like, you barely touch her arm, like run a finger up where it's real light touch. She had a hard time with that. She still kind of does. And, even that might be something like, type it up, have it something that you can hand out, have it posted somewhere if you're comfortable with it. Like, it's like in a church situation where it's going to be a repeating, like, we're going to be there every Sunday, whatever. Or somewhere at school where, this is on the daily, this is what we're going to see with our child. And that could be a collaborative process that, like, what's the best way to phrase this, whatever. But there are some things that really do fall, that do fall on the parents. And that is one thing that we should be, as parents, need to take the responsibility for. Like, I can't just drop my child off to you who's special needs and not tell you the best ways to handle. That's a scary situation for someone who's never worked with someone who's autistic. If we ever take her anywhere, I don't post her meds or anything like that. It's not that, but my best friends know her food allergies, her food sensitivities, and we typically prepare her foods before we leave the house. We have something ready, because she has 26 of them. So, and we've joked about it. Like, people ask, well, what can you feed her? We're like, ice. We feed her ice. That kind of case, do they have allergies? Do they have sensitivities? For the love, don't give her the red Skittles with the red 40 in them, unless you just want to have a rip roaring good time. But, there was one time we were having, we do a program called Awana at my church. It's a kids program. And bless him, one of the leaders wanted to, of course, Caitlin wanted Doritos. Who doesn't want Doritos? Well, the combination of cheese and MSG is like gasoline and a match. And you want to talk about somebody having a meltdown? She would have gone postal through the ceiling with that, with her behavior. And bless her, she, he asked, hey, do you want something to eat? And so she reached for the Doritos. Me too, kid, And I remember going across the table going, no, don't give her that, And he was like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And it just was not, because I was right there, and it was just a moment when And he was real comfortable with her, and I just happened to, you know, and I looked away at something else for a minute, and he didn't mean anything by it, but then I about sailed trying to get that bag away from her.
Yes, I have been in those as an allergy mom myself. I have been in those moments, and it, you know, it's all about that communication, and sometimes it's all about that diving in as fast as you can to stop it because you don't have time to communicate ahead of time. Yeah. Well, Melanie, I am so thankful for your time. I know we're heading over our hour here. Did you have any other follow-ups?
No, I appreciate you coming on and just sharing your story. And I think it can be very helpful, right?
Yeah, I really appreciate you being so vulnerable and being so willing to share all the hard things and giving us like a glimpse inside of a view from a mom who's lived this life for quite a few years. And thank you for your contribution with your book.
There's a website for the book. It's www.mommater.com. And if you'll give me just half a second, I'm going to reach and grab the book. I should have had the book in hand. Give me half a second. You're going to look at my recliner for a minute. So, okay.
Oh, that'd be perfect. I don't know if you can see it.
This is the book. Yes, this is the book. Okay. My husband actually did the design for the cover. I told him roughly what I wanted.
Yes.
You can't see it perfectly, but anyway. And that's actually Caitlin's handwriting. That was one thing that we talked about, like, hey, do you think we can do this? But this is my 22-year-old's handwriting. So that is her. And of course, you know, it's made her from cars, but so that's the book. And again, you know, I come at it from a different perspective, and I'm a Christian, and I tell you what, I've survived by the grace of God. I'm not trying to, you know, proselytize or shove anything down anybody's throat, but that is how we have really survived this process, is a lot of prayer, a lot of people praying for us, and just leaning, because I couldn't do it by myself, that's for sure, you know.
Yeah Well, thank you so much, Melanie. I totally appreciate it, and we'll share that information about the book, and we look forward to talking.
That'd be awesome.
I totally am gonna do something about it after I read. Well, I look forward to following up after I read the book for sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Hopefully it was helpful. If you would like to gain access to this entire video, and actually our entire library of videos, please join our ABA Business Leaders membership. You can find that at www.3pisquare.com.